It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. There are many things that make Iowa unique, and I would argue that there are many things that make Iowa special. But is our language really one of them? Apparently, it is. A slim new volume called How to Speak Midwestern is getting a lot of attention, and author Edward McClellan is here with us today. Hello, Ted.
Hi. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here today. And throughout the hour, we also hope to hear from you. If you are a transplant to Iowa, let us know some of the things that sounded a bit strange to you when you moved to Iowa. Share some of your favorite Iowa-isms. You can also ask questions about how we use language, how we pronounce things here in the state. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And, Ted, you grew up in the Midwest. You're a Michigander, right?
I'm a Michigander, and I live for the last 20 years in Chicago, and I also lived in downstate Illinois, so I've been all over the Midwest.
So was there a point when, most of us in the Midwest do tend to think that we are the place in the United States that does not have an accent? And when you were growing up in Michigan, did you feel that way about how you spoke?
I did. And then when I was at the University of Michigan and I was taking a linguistics class, and I asked a student from New Jersey if she'd noticed anything distinctive about the way Michiganders talk. And she said, well, you'll say things like can or sand with that sort of sharp raised A that's, I guess we'll talk about it later, is a feature of the Northern City vowel shift. And I mentioned this to my professor, and he drew this little AE symbol on the chalkboard as sort of a linguistic representation of what I was talking about. But yeah, until then, I thought that, you know, as they say in the book, accents are an important part of regional identity, and an important part of being a Midwesterner is believing you don't have an accent.
Absolutely. So once you had that conversation, did you start hearing other things in how people in Michigan spoke?
Yeah, I mean, I thought about my friend John Mark, who was a guitar player and always talked about his band. And I remember going away and calling back and hearing someone say, Michigan State, which I also heard parodied. Somebody actually, Saturday Night Live is famous for the Superfans parody. Everyone remembers that about the Bears.
Yeah.
They also did one called 1-600 Lansing about my hometown, which is a phone sex line for men who love women with sexy South Central Michigan accents. So the rest of the country does notice that there is a Midwestern accent, although I should say I'm talking about the accent that's prevalent where I come from, the Inland North accent, which goes basically from Rochester to Milwaukee. Most of Iowa has a Midland accent, although the northern tiers of the counties has what you call a North Central accent. They share that with Minnesota.
Right. I think they would argue it's a little less pronounced than maybe a Minnesotan accent, but we can get into that argument a little bit later on.
I did hear you bet a lot in northern Iowa.
So let's break down the Midwestern region because, of course, as we know, many people in other parts of the country lump us all together. But you broke down the Midwestern region into three different parts. So describe those parts for us.
Well, there's the Inland North region, and that goes, as I said, from Rochester to Milwaukee. That's basically the lower Great Lakes, and that corresponds with areas where settlers from New England established their new homes in the Midwest. Then there's the Midland region, which covers western Pennsylvania, Ohio, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Missouri, and that corresponds with Scots-Irish movement west, kind of starting from Baltimore and Philadelphia. And then you have the North Central region, which is the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and that's kind of the so-called Fargo accent,
right,
or the Upper accent. And that is where Scandinavians and Germans settled in the 19th and 20th centuries.
So within these regions within a region, you know, you talk about Iowa and Missouri being in the same part of this region. I'm sure a lot of Iowans would say, wait a minute, we don't sound like people from Missouri.
Well, sure. You wouldn't sound like people from southern Missouri, but you might sound like people from Kansas City or northern Missouri. So, you know, they don't correspond exactly to state lines.
The other really interesting thing is that cities within these regions, the cities themselves seem to have their own accent. You already referenced that Saturday Night Live skit about the superfans with that Chicago accent. And, I mean, that's obviously a very real thing that still exists. Maybe not like it sounded on Saturday Night Live, but there's definitely a Chicago accent.
Oh, it still exists. I was in a bar on the south side of Chicago not too long ago watching a Bears game. And I remember, you know, you do the squares for every quarter, and the score was 13 to 10. And someone said, what are the squares this quarter? And the guy says, 0 and 3. So, and, you know, they were talking about, oh, yeah, George Blanda, he used to play for the Bears. You know, he was the great quarterback. So, you know, the older, you can still hear it among older people, especially on the south side. It hasn't died out completely yet.
Well, and where is this prevalent, or among whom is this prevalent, that this accent would persist? Because I feel like young people move around the country so much and have so many different influences that maybe you wouldn't hear it so much in millennials. But how does it get carried forward?
Well, yeah, I mean, I still hear a few millennials in Chicago do it. But definitely, well, first of all, one thing is that's especially true in the Midwest is that what you think of as regional accents are, first of all, they're mostly white accents. The Midwest has a bigger degree of, I guess, accent segregation or variation between races than any other part of the country. Hmm. And that's because it was so segregated. When African Americans moved up from the South to work in the industries, they were confined to neighborhoods where they had little social interaction with whites and jobs where they had little professional interaction with whites. And so they maintained their Southern speech habits. And so, you know, it tends to be among white people who have deep roots in an area, who lived there for several generations and, you know, probably have haven't been to college or have jobs that don't require them to have much contact with outsiders, like say police officers or firefighters or factory workers or retail clerks, that sort of thing. That's where you're going to hear the strongest accents. I mean, if you go to Chicago, maybe 10, 15% of the people who live in the city of Chicago actually speak in what you would consider a classic Chicago accent. And I think also the decline of industry had a lot to do with the leveling of accents in some big cities, because in the 60s, you got out of high school, you didn't have to go to college to get a good job. You didn't even have to leave your neighborhood. So you could go across the street, get a job in a steel mill or an auto plant. You didn't have to talk to anybody outside your shop or your neighborhood or your parish. And that local accent was kind of a sign of masculinity that, you know, kind of made you look like a regular guy on the work site. So, you know, the younger kids, the millennials, they had to go to college. And as you say, they're more likely to move around to get a job. And so they've had to moderate their accents to meet sort of more of a national standard than their parents and grandparents did.
Well, and that raises a really interesting question. Where do we get our accent from? If we don't grow up speaking like our parents speak, where does it come from?
Sure. Well, I mean, it comes from your peers, I think, as much as your parents. So, you know, as new people move in, new influences move in, people who might not share the local accent, you might not be doing it as much as your parents were. One thing I definitely learned in doing this is that every generation has its own sound. Every generation, you know, has its own accent, just as every generation has its own slang. So, you know, accents are not fixed. Accents are always changing throughout history.
And so if we're picking this up from our peers, Does that mean that our accent will change throughout our formative years? I'm thinking about when my kids were really little, we were living in Michigan, actually, and there was a woman in our neighborhood who we saw at the library all the time. She had two young kids, and she was Australian, had a very thick Australian accent, and she was a stay-at-home mom. She was with her kids all the time, and they were maybe, you know, 3 and 5, and they sounded just like my kids.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's it. They're not going to pick it up from their parents. I mean, I know the same situation. I knew some people who, from England, who moved to Chicago, and their kids sounded just like Chicagoans. And then they moved back to England, and now their kids sound English.
Interesting.
They moved back early enough so that their kids could pick up an accent. So after puberty, it's harder to lose an accent or to change an accent.
It's a little more fixed at that point.
Yeah. Yes.
So this Midwestern accent, and, you know, with all of its different variations, has become something that we hear in broadcasting. Broadcasters even may alter their accent that they grew up with to sound more Midwestern. How did that become a preference? Because, you know, in so many other ways, the Midwest is ignored.
Well, that goes back all the way to the 1920s, and you heard this recently. There were all these recordings of FDR on the 75th anniversary of Pearl Harbor Day, and he's giving his speech to Congress, and he's talking about the Empire of Japan and declared war on the United States, and that's what you call a transatlantic accent. That used to be considered sort of the classy way of speaking, the way that you wanted to aspire to talk.
Right, like Cary Grant States. And Katharine Hepburn.
Katharine Hepburn is a better example, because Cary Grant is English. Katharine Hepburn, George Plimpton, William F. Buckley, all examples of, and even Midwesterners did it. I listened to an old recording of William McKinley, and he talked that way. But in the 1920s, there was a philologist at Hiram College near Cleveland named John S. Kenyon. And he became the leading pronunciation expert in the United States. And so the pronunciations that he championed were those that he was hearing in northeastern Ohio, in the inland north region. So
All right.
He said, we want to pronounce our R's. We don't want to say war. We want to say war.
And we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment to find out how that idea spread and why more and more people speak Midwestern. My guest this hour is Edward McClellan. He is the author of How to Speak Midwestern, and we'd love to hear from you as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about our Midwestern accent. And with me is Edward McClellan. He is the author of the new book, How to Speak Midwestern. And just before the break, we were talking about how this Midwestern accent became a preferred accent in broadcasting and maybe in politics. And you were just telling us that the R is really kind of the key to the accent.
Yeah, well, that's called roticity, pronouncing your R's. And of course, in the Midwest, we pronounce our R's. We really lean on our R's. You know, we go out to the garage to work on the car's engine.
Not only do we pronounce our R's, but if you want to sound like a Midwesterner, if you want to exaggerate it, you really draw those R's out.
Yeah, one thing I did hear in Iowa a lot was people would say things like, well, we're going to the Career Center on Friday.
All right.
So, they would leave out that vowel. And then we're going to the restaurant.
It's interesting because I've always kind of thought of vowels, our flat vowels, as being the key to our accent. But I guess
consonants are part of it too.
Interesting. And the R's are key. In fact, you have a whole list of things that you need to do to speak Midwestern. But before we get into those, one guy said that's better. You should use your R's instead of not using your R's.
That was Kenyon, and he influenced the NBC handbook of pronunciation. So if you go back and listen to newscasters in the World War II era, like Lowell Thomas or Edward R. Murrow, they pronounced their R's as he would have advised. So after World War II, the the dropping your R's just kind of fell completely out of favor with Middle America. I mean, it was associated with, you know, New Yorkers or Southerners, and the Midwest became the standard. And, you know, inland north, I suppose, is now a little more distinct from the rest of the country because of what I was talking about, the northern cities vowel shift, which is said to be the biggest change in English vowel pronunciation in 1,000 years. And that's what makes people from Chicago say things like, you know, absolutely, or pronounce B-O-X like box, that sort of long elongated O. And now it's the Midland accent, which you'll hear in Iowa, which is sort of considered now the most, I don't know, I guess least othered of accents, the least noticed. And here's a quote I have from a linguist I talked to. Midland speech occupies a transitional area from the northern edge to the south. People in most parts of the country wouldn't notice it was very different. Generally speaking, it's a national average because it's the middle of the country. Pronunciations are on a gradient, and it's in the middle of the gradient.
Interesting. So we're the middle of the middle.
Exactly.
All right. So in addition to those R's, like I said, you shared some other pointers for how to speak Midwestern, how to sound Midwestern, and they may not all sound particularly complimentary, but your first advice is talk through your nose, and yeah, you hear that with that sound.
Yeah, well, try talking as though your lower jaw is falling off and you have to form words with the rest of your face, and you'll be on your way to achieving Midwestern nasality. And when you combine that with your hard R's, that's why some people say that Midwesterners sound like pirates with head colds.
I've never heard anyone say that.
Okay.
All right. And so also, like I said, I thought the key to our accent was the vowels, but you say that omitting vowels is part of the key.
Well, that's certainly what I heard. Yeah. As I was saying, I heard in Iowa, you know, we're going to see the director of the Career Center on Friday. Or we went to a restaurant on Saturday and had a great steak and potato.
All right. You also get into culture, not just how we pronounce things, but here's a line, and I have to admit that I recognize myself and many other people in this line. If you must criticize, do so passive-aggressively.
Right. See, Midwesterners don't like to sound critical or hurt anyone's feelings, so we developed code words that allow us to avoid stating an opinion altogether. Most important are interesting and different.
That's so true. Well, and you point out that, for example, people say that in New York, every insult is actually a compliment.
I can read that. Okay. It says that in New York, every insult is a compliment. This is my buddy, Jerry. He's been busting my balls for 30 years now, right, Jer? In the South, on the other hand, every compliment is an insult. Well, aren't you kind? In the Midwest, you're never certain whether you're being complimented or insulted. So here I have some tips for using interesting and different.
Okay.
Something has merit, but you don't personally care for it. It's interesting. Whoa, what do you think of the Vikings' new stadium? No, that's interesting. The story is told of a consultant who presented an idea to a group of Minnesotans and thought it was going over well because they all said it was interesting. That's why they need this book.
Absolutely.
Now, what do you think of that mural under the Wilson Avenue Viaduct with three dolphins sporting with the Queen of the Nile? That's pretty different. And I had an anecdote in there about the New York Times story about reaction in Minnesota to the movie Fargo. And they quoted a guy coming out after a screening and saying, well, that was different. It's the worst review you can possibly get in the Midwest.
Two thumbs down, way down.
Exactly. Yes.
All right. Well, and then this one I love too, because I've lived in Iowa, I've lived in Indiana, and I've lived in Michigan. And
yes,
I feel like this is how you crack the code to get in with the locals. But your rule is mispronounce foreign names. And
yes,
that everywhere, you know, here in Iowa, we have Madrid, we have Nevada, we have Tripola. You know, we love to mispronounce foreign names. And if you don't know how to say them the way we say them, then we know you're not from here.
And in either in central Illinois, we had San Joe's, Sandoval, it would have been Sandoval. And then in Illinois, there's Cairo at the bottom of the state. Versailles, Indiana, and even Detroit. That should be Detroit. St. Louis should be San Luis.
Well, we've got Buena Vista here in Iowa is another one.
There's a Buena Vista in Michigan, too. Well, you know, we want everybody read about the Mexican War in the newspaper, and they never heard anybody speak Spanish, so they sort of worked it out for themselves and named it after these great victories. So I guess if you win the war, you can pronounce it any way you want. I suppose that was the attitude.
Well, I do kind of – I love it that we have our own secret code, and we get to say them our own way. We've got a lot of people on the phone who want to get into this conversation and a lot more to talk about this hour, but let's get to the phones, and you can join us at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. My guest is Edward McClellan. He's the author of How to Speak Midwestern. And Kirk is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Kirk.
Hello.
Hi, and you've got a kind of a cultural observation for us. What's your story?
Yeah, I was having dinner with a friend last week, and she said that she used to work in an old folks home, and in the room that was for people with dementia who couldn't talk anymore and that kind of thing, if you started singing the Iowa fight song, every one of them started singing it. Like, it didn't matter how far gone they were, how much they didn't remember, like, everyone there could sing the Iowa fight song word perfect every time.
Wow. Well, Kirk,
like,
yeah, thanks so much for sharing that. And we've talked about the musical connections that last so long. But, I mean, that, Ted, that really speaks to a cultural connection here in Iowa.
Sure. I mean, I'm sure the same thing would if you played the Hail to the Victors in Michigan.
Right.
You'd get people singing along. I've got to say, if somebody out there knows the origin of the word Iowegian, I've been trying to nail that down. So please call in.
Okay. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. So we know what it means, Iowegian, because we have so many Norwegians, but you're wondering where it came from?
Sure. Yeah. I wanted to include it, but I couldn't really get a definition nailed down. So I want to learn more Iowisms that we can possibly use in a future edition of the book. I've got plenty in there already, which we can talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. But, and we will dig into those for sure. There was one that I thought was interesting. You didn't include it. You talked about our West Coast, the Missouri River, and our East Coast, the Mississippi River. But I ran into one after I moved to Michigan. I was talking to somebody about the drive from Iowa to Michigan, and you know, and I said something about crossing the river, and he looked at me and he said, "What river?" And I realized, well, if you say that to an Iowan that crossed the river, everybody knows you're talking about the Mississippi River.
Right. How many? Well, there are two rivers, but the Mississippi is the river.
That's the one. That's the one. So let's get back to the phones. Jim is on the line. And Spencer, hi, Jim.
Yeah, hi. Well, you know, we considered this a lot growing up. And, you know, I came from a background where people were isolated to a fair amount. You know, the teachers were eventually your parents, that sort of thing. I think, you know, diction and pronunciation was drilled into us at a regular basis. I think that in this particular area where we came from such a large combination of people from around the country and around the planet that, you know, things may have canceled each other out to a degree. I know that we had a propensity for, you know, well-trained teachers in this state, and you know, the areas that I came from, which was, you know, around the Big Sioux and that sort of thing. But you know, gradually people, they became indoctrinated to speech through radio. I kind of think that here in the Midwest we were cleansing things a bit. We were trending towards people who sounded neutral, and I think that's kind of what, you know, Iowa, particularly this part of the Midwest, is known for. It would seem to me is that we kind of cancel out a lot of the particulars and we become homogenized in a way. I don't know. I just thought you might consider that.
Jim, thanks a lot for sharing those thoughts. What do you think, Ted?
Well, I think that, you know, that's to me getting to a – Iowa, to me, seems – it's kind of like – Iowa is like the Midwest of the Midwest, you know. I think Iowa feels like – the rest of the Midwest treats it like the Midwest treats the rest of the country, like sort of the flyover part of the region. And so, as he was saying, so that it is right there in the middle. It is a place where you have, you know, people from different parts of the country and different backgrounds coming together. So it's not kind of up there and isolated the way northern Minnesota or northern Michigan are, sort of out of the path of settlement. So I think there may be something to the fact that that's why Iowans have an accent that's closer to the national average than other parts of the Midwest. And also, as he was talking about teaching, I mean, but that goes on everywhere. I know a friend who grew up in the Marquette Park neighborhood of Chicago in the 80s, and he said, all right, you guys, you got to stop saying these, them, and does, because you go outside of Chicago, everybody's going to think you're uneducated. Everyone's going to think you're an idiot. So education does have a lot to do with it, I think, even more than radio and television.
Well, and I was just going to ask you that because, of course, in Iowa, if you go back several generations, for example, you know, the Germans during World War One and World War Two didn't want to sound like Germans. Mm-hmm. And they're also, you know, the idea that people from rural areas are hicks or, you know, there are all these stereotypes. So has part of this change been people deliberately trying to change the way that they speak so that they don't get stereotyped?
Well, sure. I talked to somebody who moved from Ohio to Texas, and she said that as soon as she moved down there, everybody started making fun of her nasal pronunciation. And she actually started practicing talking by pinching her nose, so she wasn't talking through her nose. And she finally said she got it to a point where people weren't noticing her and stigmatizing her. So once it's sort of noticed and made fun of either by somebody you know or through some media portrayal, I think that leads people to want to change the way they talk. Because I did talk to a linguist who said that Saturday Night Live skit about the guy saying the Bears, that led to people – the diminution of that feature of substituting D for TH, which goes back, you know, several generations and can be traced to immigrants who came here with languages that didn't have the TH sound. So that's definitely a feature that is really disappearing, not just in Chicago, but in other Midwestern cities among young people.
Interesting. And maybe Fargo did a little bit of the same thing up in Minnesota.
Oh, you betcha it did. I mean, they don't say you betcha anymore. I mean, they only say you betcha to be ironic. I mean, I went to a restaurant in Minneapolis and I asked if they have lutefisk. And of course, lutefisk is just this stereotypically Minnesotan dish. And the guy said, oh, you betcha, you know, in saying, oh, yeah, well, we're stereotypically Minnesotan here. So I actually went to, when I was researching this book, I went to Brainerd, Minnesota, which is where part of Fargo is set. And I didn't hear anybody who would speak in what you would consider the Fargo accent. But I went back and listened to oral histories from the county historical society. And the older people absolutely were doing it. So they captured an accent that was probably, the Coen brothers captured an accent that was probably prevalent when they were growing up in Minnesota, in the 50s and 60s, but is not heard as much, and that they, in fact, probably contributed to helping kill off.
Wow, interesting. Sue is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Sue.
Hello.
Hi, what's your story?
Well, I'm a professional actress, and I've been working here in the Midwest for 45 years, but I have a lot of friends out in New York that I go out and visit. And whenever I go out and start running around, socializing and stuff with their actor friends, I find myself trapped at a table with 10 or 12 actors who want me to talk because they want to hear my flat Midwest accent because that's what all of them are shooting for. In fact, I had a young actress who had gotten a role in a play where she was playing a social worker from Des Moines. And she offered me $100 to let her tape me reading her script so that she would be able to listen and get the accent correct.
Wow. Did you do it?
Yeah, I didn't take the money, though.
Oh, okay.
Actors have to support other actors.
Sounds like a great career opportunity.
Absolutely. So do you find that they actually try to imitate you? Do you get cornered and then...
Oh, yes. We sit at the table there, and it's hysterical. It's absolutely hysterical because so many of the things that you've talked about already are so unnatural to them. And to hear them sitting there trying to say car...
And how do they
when it for them, for most of them, it's ka.
Uh-huh.
And I was amazed the number of people in New York who use the term wash.
Oh, well,
for a washing machine.
You don't hear that in Iowa at all? I hear it in the lower Midwest all the time.
Well, there are parts of Iowa where it's common and parts where it doesn't seem to be heard. And I think it might be one of those things that is slipping away also.
Yeah, it is a generational thing.
Yeah. Sue, thank you so much for your call. We're going to take another short break. We'll be back in just a moment. My guest is Edward McClelland. He is the author of How to Speak Midwestern. You can join us at 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe this hour. My guest is Edward McClelland. He's the author of How to Speak Midwestern. And, of course, we're talking about the Midwestern accent and dialect, talking about Iowa's accent and dialect as well.
And I have a quick question for you. I heard somebody earlier talk about the Big Sioux. What was he talking about?
Northwestern Iowa.
Okay. Is that near Sioux City?
The Big Sioux is a river, so that's in that part of the state.
Oh, he was talking about a river.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, not a part of the state. I see. Thank you.
But the whole watershed, you know.
Okay.
All right. He was up in Spencer in northwestern Iowa.
Okay.
And we've got, oh, my goodness, so many questions and so many comments. And I want to return to Warsh because we did touch on that briefly. And Megan has tweeted and said, is there a reason my dad says Warsh instead of Wash? I know he isn't the only Iowan who does that. And
that's the most distinctive feature of the Midland dialect. And you'll hear that all the way from Pittsburgh. My stepmother's from Granite City, Illinois, and she says Warsh. You'll hear it in St. Louis. I mean, it persists to this day. Bob Knight was, when he was endorsing Donald Trump, he told the audience, he said, if you people go out and vote for Donald Trump, you'll be up there with the founding fathers like George Washington. So, and there's a guy from the St. Louis Cardinals who talks about the Washington Nationals. Supposedly it comes from, in eastern Pennsylvania, they say water for water. And that O sound ended up taking on an R. So whoosh became whoosh.
Interesting.
And then it got spread westward. But that is a generational thing. People in St. Louis told me that younger people sort of consciously have stopped saying Warsh.
Well, and in Iowa, at least when I was growing up, I thought it was a southern Iowa, northern Iowa difference, that in northern Iowa we said Wash, and in southern Iowa they said Warsh.
That's true. Where did you grow up in Iowa?
I grew up in Cedar Falls, Iowa.
Okay. So that could be more, because that has more of the northern,
right,
the northern influence. The Minnesota influence.
Right, right. And
the Iowegians.
Right. Our O's can get long on occasion as well. All right, let's get back to the phones. Ann is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Ann.
Hello. There's one thing that I've noticed probably starting maybe back 10 years ago, and now it's become very strong, and I'm thinking that we're acquiring all over the whole United States a new accent, and it's pronouncing sterile, sterile. It's pronouncing sterile, sterile. We have all of a sudden changed to all these aisles where we used to be not pronouncing the L as another consonant. And I think it probably comes from all of us watching all that Brit TV on PBS.
Well, there's a theory, Ann. Thanks so much for sharing that. So, Ted, what do you think?
I personally haven't noticed that.
Okay.
I doubt that British accents would influence us as much as we would influence British accents. They see a lot more of our TV than we see of their TV.
Interesting. Well, and I wonder if that's an another difference of people trying to sound educated.
Sterile. Huh. I say sterile. What do you say?
I say sterile as well. But
yeah.
I have heard, instead of fragile, I've heard fragile. I've heard that
that's
more often
British,
than I used to.
A British pronunciation. Okay. Well, I'll listen for that.
Okay. Maybe the next book.
Yeah.
All right, Ann, thanks a lot for your call. Here's another Ann on the line in Des Moines this time. Hi, Ann. Ann, are you there?
Hello. Yes, from Des Moines.
Yeah.
Am I the right one?
You're the right one.
Okay. What, I grew up in Detroit. I've lived all over East Coast, West Coast. One of the things that I have, and I love Iowa, there's nothing negative here, but one of the things that I've always been puzzled about is leaving out the to be. So, like, it doesn't need to be fixed, it needs fixed. It doesn't need be cleaned, it needs cleaned. And I guess, being kind of a grammar freak, it's like, nails on a chalkboard. And I just wonder what the, what your guest has to say about that and if I'm just being, a little annoyed by it or I should just let it go. So thank you.
Yeah, okay, thanks a lot for your call, Anne. And that's definitely one that I hear and I grew up saying, where you drop the verb to be.
You hear that in Pittsburgh, too. I mean, that's a Midland feature. I mean, you don't hear it in other parts of the Midwest. You don't hear it in other parts of the country. It goes back to Ireland. It's a construction. I have it in the book. The construction of needs without a past participle is in that needs worst. Goes back to Ireland. So these are traces of Ulster speech that can still be heard all the way to Iowa from the migration of the Scots-Irish.
All right, so when Anne hears that, instead of feeling annoyed, she should think of Ireland?
Yes, she should be thinking this is part of her Irish heritage. Another thing is, and this is, I heard a lot in central Illinois, I don't know how common it is in Iowa, is positive anymore, when anymore is used to indicate a continuing action. As in saying something like, anymore, there's so much traffic, you can hardly drive there.
Interesting. I've heard that one. It hasn't slipped into my usage yet. We'll see.
Okay. But yeah, I definitely heard it a lot in other parts of the Midland region. And then there's the COTCAUGHT merger. How do you pronounce those two words?
Caught and caught.
See, I pronounce them differently.
All right. How do you say them?
Caught and caught.
All right.
So in the inland north, they're pronounced differently, but most of the country has adopted the, and it's not a merger when I say it, but I'm going to say it, the caught merger.
Interesting. All right. Let's, here's one that we do hear all the time in Iowa, and you do address in your book. This one, Thomas on Twitter says, Midwesterners love to end sentences with preposition. Where's my coat at? Does that come from native languages of early immigrants who settled in the Midwest? And the one you hear most often is, where are you at?
Yeah. Yeah. One I can really address is, you want to come with. I don't know. Is that prevalent in Iowa?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that actually comes from German. And when a lot of Germans settled here, they just sort of transliterated their own languages into English. So in German, if you say "Ihr kommt mit," that means do you want to come with us? And so they just sort of transliterated into English saying, "Do you want to come with?" knowing that the "us" would be implied. And it became a Midwesternism that persists to this day.
Interesting. All right, let's go back to the phones. Laurel's on the line in Fort Dodge. Hi, Laurel.
Hi. Nice to talk to you. We moved to the state of Washington, and I went into a store, and the man asked me a question, which I gave a positive answer to, and I said, yeah. And he said, well, my wife's from Iowa. Are you from Iowa? And I said, yes, I am. But the thing is, you talked about that, adding the R. I grew up in Rolfe, north of Rolfe, and my husband grew up in Fort Dodge, and we both put that R in, like Wash. We did the washing in George Washington, and our folks did, too, and everybody I knew did. I lost it, hopefully, when we moved to Washington, because
no one else out there had RN.
But those are my only two comments. But that R is more pervasive than your guest said, because I grew up with that.
All right, Laurel, and maybe more pervasive than I'm giving it credit for. Laurel, thank you so much for your call. That's amazing that she could be identified as an Iowan by one word.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah, I would think of a Minnesotan or a Wisconsinite. They say yeah up there, too.
You asked about Iowegian, and we do have a comment on Iowegian. This is from Amy. She said, I'm not sure if this helps the conversation, but I grew up in Omaha across the river from Council Bluffs, and Iowegian was a pejorative for those with Iowa plates who dared to cross the river.
Okay.
So maybe just like Baja, Minnesota
is
a pejorative for Iowa. Maybe that comes from an insult from elsewhere. All right.
I'll write that down.
All right. You'll have to research it. But here's Susan on the line in Ames. Hi, Susan. Wow.
Hi.
Hi.
My question has to do with another grammatical construction that puts my teeth on edge. And it's the phrase have went. Or has went, he has went to the store. I was wondering why that's so common in Iowa. I haven't heard it elsewhere and where it came from.
All right. Were you able to hear her, Ted?
Yeah, I would think that would probably be another German legacy, another example of Germans just sort of transliterating their language into English. Because I know Iowa did have a lot of German heritage. So that would be my guess for that one. I don't think I addressed that specifically in the book. I addressed other Germanisms like, can you borrow me $5, which you'll certainly hear in Wisconsin, because in colloquial German, Borgen can mean to borrow or to lend. So they assign the same definitions to both. So I would guess that comes from German. Can't be 100% sure.
Okay, interesting. And it's interesting how just little pieces of a language will survive like that. And I'm sorry, I'm not sure how to pronounce your name. Is it Kajal in Des Moines?
Kajal.
Okay, hi.
This is Kajal.
Kajal, sorry about that.
Kajal. Well, you were talking about mispronouncing foreign names, so there you are.
I'm just being Iowan, I guess. I'm sorry.
Absolutely. Well, address some of the things you've been saying, I grew up on Queen's English in India, and I do say sterile and fragile. But the perspective I wanted to bring in was of my kindergartner. So, I mean, she's presumably being raised on, you know, Iowan Midwestern English. And like we say water and better, you know, she'll say water and better. And so she rolls her T's. And to her, they sound like D. So in her school, they have this writer's workshop where they just write phonetically. And I see her regularly transposing D for T. And she even dropped the T, like she'll say Best Buy, and she'll write Best Buy, not Best Buy, you know. And she can't even sometimes hear the R, so like for frustrated, she'll say frustrated, like she won't even write it that. So I was just wondering if she's being raised in the Midwestern way, is that how, you know, it'll finally gel or whatever? And she corrects me. Like, when I say data, she'll say, it's not data, Mama, it's Dara. And I said, no, they're both fine. And so I just wanted to hear about that, you know, from a different perspective.
Yeah, very interesting. Now, a lot of us have watched our children do that creative spelling and wondered a little bit as they go through that process. But so is Kajal watching the Midwestern accent develop in front of her?
Yes. I mean, you know, as we were talking about, you know, the children pick up what they hear around them, not what they hear at home from their peers and from school. So there's a Midwestern accent budding there.
Now, we have a Facebook question about the phrase you guys, and that's something you wrote about extensively. So tell me about you guys.
Well, you know, English has a problem. English doesn't have a standard second person plural. So in the South, they'll say y'all, and that's perfectly acceptable. And it used to be a common solution was to say yous. And that came, that's another thing that came from Irish, although that those were, these were from actually the Catholic Irish. So they have a second person plural in that language. When they switched to English, they just added an S to the U to make it into a plural. But that's a word that's kind of lost favor. And one of my theories is that Archie Bunker helped kill it off. You know, people didn't want to sound like an Archie Bunker type and say yous. So what's become acceptable is you guys. And to me, it's, I don't know, it's a less graceful solution than yous or yins, as they say in Pittsburgh.
Well, and y'all, which would be the southern solution.
The southern, it's probably a less graceful solution than that. But, you know, you can't say y'all in the Midwest. Come on. but even with yous, that would end up with yous guys. Yous guys was the... was the sort of northern equivalent of all y'all. So, but yeah, you guys has sort of become the more, and even I met a guy in Pittsburgh and he said his teacher told him to stop saying yins and say you guys instead. So that's become the more socially acceptable way of speaking.
And it's genderless now.
Well, I suppose it is. It's genderless, even though it is a gendered construction. So, personally, I think we need a better solution. So, if anybody has a better idea, we could go back to yiz. That's fine with me.
Good luck with that. I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm not sure that's going to work.
You still hear it in Chicago sometimes.
So, of course, our language continues to evolve. What do you see happening to Midwestern speak in the next decades?
Well, I think that sort of maybe some of the local accents are going to become less prevalent, like the Chicago accent and the Cleveland accent. And I mean, even in Chicago, linguists are finding that they're being the classic Chicago accent has been replaced by a more general Midwestern accent.
We only have a couple of minutes, but it makes it sound like everybody's going to start sounding like they're from Iowa.
It could be. As I said, Iowa is the Midwest of the Midwest. I mean, a lot of people who are from and live in Chicago are from Iowa. I did some of my research in the University of Iowa Tavern on the north side of Chicago. So I just wanted to talk about some of the unique Iowa phrases.
Okay, we've got a minute left. Throw them out there.
To me, Kaibo is the quintessential Iowa word. And I just found out, and I'm going to put this in a future edition, it's an acronym for keep your bowels open.
And, of course, referring to a port-a-john.
Exactly. The loose meat sandwich, you don't hear about that anywhere but Iowa, a term for the made right.
Right.
Dutch letters, those S-shaped pastries, those cookies. We mentioned East Coast and West Coast. All right.
Right.
Everybody in Iowa knows what ragbri means, but nobody outside Iowa is going to know what it means.
Although we're taking over the world. So Edward McClellan, thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
Edward McClellan is the author of How to Speak Midwestern. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.